Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Morning Tech Show. We're not recording on Saturday. We're recording on Sunday. Rob and I made an executive decision that if we're going to try to keep the show moving on travel weeks, that we will record on Sunday, even on the weekends when I'm traveling on Saturdays. So I want to welcome you to the Morning Tech Show. And Rob Greenlee is on the bottom. Good morning, Rob. How are you this morning?
Doing fantastic. It's great to be here on Sunday. So I guess we dropped the whole Saturday morning tech show, and we're just going with the morning tech show, which gives us all the options to go any day of the week then.
That's right. And I actually probably need to come up with some new album art, because I think the album art says Saturday Morning Tech.
It does. It does. Yeah.
And we've got, I guess today we've got, I'm going to probably destroy your last name, James, it's James Botoroff. Is that how you pronounce it?
Botoroff. You got an extra consonant in there, but pretty close.
But James is with KiroRadio.com, and we're going to talk about his site and then what they're doing over there at KiroRadio.com. So actually going, whoops, that was nice. I had the wrong camera set up. Yes, it is Sunday morning, and I have been gone for a while, so let me switch this. There we go. All right, now we've got the right one in there. So there's the website, KiroRadio.com, and we'll find out more about that info here, or about the site in just a few minutes, and what they're doing with the radio/podcasting initiatives. But Rob, how you been the past week or so?
Good. Good. I'm getting excited for spring here in the Seattle area. The trees are getting ready to pop out with some leaves, and I'm looking for warmer weather. So, that's what's going on here.
And I'm looking forward to where, and I go to the lower 48. I don't have to travel with I don't have to travel with a coat, and that is always great. That it loses 10 pounds that I have to have in my suitcase. So as soon as it gets warmer, the better. But I think I'm going to Indianapolis, of all places, next week. No, not this coming week, but the following week. So we will be able to do this show on Saturday next weekend. Should be no problems. But
so the big thing that's going on right now is South by Southwest. I know. I wore my South by Southwest t-shirt. That's the closest I got to it this year. But there seems to be a lot of tech activity coming out of Austin.
Yeah, so. I know. And I was looking for some, you know, there's not a lot of blog coverage. There's a little bit, but not just a huge amount. I was, you know, someone asked me, how come you didn't go to South By? And I'm like, well, and I've got a couple of reasons. And, you know, I've been in several times. And
yeah, I have too.
And what I find is it's more of a party than it is a business. You know, it's from business productivity standpoint. So, it never was able to justify the extreme amount of money that, you know, they charge $400 or $500 a night for hotel rooms during South By, and you stand in lines everywhere. There's no such thing as getting in and getting out of a place normally, you know, quickly. And then of course the parties are fun. You know, you can't ever turn down a good party, but, and when you're spending that kind of money, you want to go there and get some business out of it. And I just don't find I get a lot of quote unquote true business that relates to dollars. It's, you know, it's great for social media and hooking up with the folks in the space. But yeah, I think the businesses are starting to go more. You know, what are you seeing? Are you seeing that more businesses are going and making it a value for people that are there?
Yeah, I think it seems to be doing quite well from the standpoint of you know, kind of like the blend of the creative types and the technologists all kind of coming together, and celebrities and things like that. It's actually, it feels a little bit this year like it's a little bit competitive to even like a CES event. It seems to be very hardware focused this year, and the whole kind of startup around apps and things like that doesn't seem to be quite as hot this year. It seems like that the, you know, like the Leap Motion controller and just kind of general kind of tech VCs and media. And I mean, I know that there's a lot of podcasters there and a lot of kind of media creators. I know I'm always kind of amazed as I look through my Twitter feed, how many of these tech enthusiasts and tech, you know, guys that are, podcasting and involved in it are actually down there, but I don't see a lot of podcast activity coming out of it. So I think you're exactly right. It's really turned into like a big networking event and party down there. And that's exactly what my experience was the probably 3 or 4 years that I went. That's exactly what it was. James, have you ever been and have you ever, I mean, so what's your thought on the event?
I've actually never gone. I'd love to go, and I think about going every year, but I got 2 little kids, so I don't go. I don't depart much further than work and home. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. It seems like it's become something that's more of a party than a business resource. Not that I wouldn't enjoy going to a party.
You know, it's always been kind of that way. It's always been, you know, a real big social event and lots of parties and stuff. So, you know, I knew what I was getting into when I went before. So, you know, that's not surprising. Jeffrey Powers is down there from Gigazine. I'm going to get a report from him. Jeff Hines, one of our guys from Raw Voice, is there as well. He's down and he's been sending us a few tidbits. And actually, he gained a little bit of information yesterday on something that may pay for his trip or, you know, basically, you know, help us with some business objectives. But other than that, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how the interactive part goes and just watch the news, I guess. But I think that Nest controller or whatever, that I think that's what they were saying, Rob.
Go ahead. The Nest, the thermometer, for your house?
What was the motion? The motion thing. What was that?
Yeah, the leap motion. It's called leap. It's the hand gesture.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Kinect type of device, but for your own PC. So, yeah, it's this little tiny kind of box that you put right in front of your monitor that has two kind of stereo cameras that look straight up. And as you put your hands right in front of your monitor, it actually takes over like the mouse controller almost. So It's all hand gestures.
It's
kind of like Minority Report.
I thought we saw something like that at CES. Of course, we saw a lot of stuff at CES. So, that was the hot, at least I know that is the hot news out of South by so far. So,
well, they're actually going to start shipping that in, I think it is May. I think it's May 15th or something like that. I have a pre-order in for it as well. I'm gonna use it here. So here in a future show, I'll be gesturing like this at you so you can, you know, see how it works.
Well, you know, it has all kinds of interesting applications, especially if you can build macros for it and stuff. So,
well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're building a complete app store kind of around it. Right. So you can have plugins that will plug into other apps and things like that will basically take advantage of all of the capabilities of the hand gesturing.
All right. Very cool. So, James, I was over looking at your website here, Carol Radio. Obviously, you guys are a traditional radio station along with building a podcast network out of that. Or tell us about it.
We are a traditional radio network. We have 3 radio stations. It's actually Cairo, like the city. And then we have a conservative station and a sports station. So we've got, we're one of the few stations in the country that's still doing a tremendous amount of local programming. So what we kind of figured out, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years ago, was that we have a incredible wealth of content that we're producing on a daily basis. And for the most part, after it airs, it disappears. So enter the world of podcasting that lets make this stuff available to people on their schedules and see what we can do with it. And it's honestly, it's been one of the most successful things that we've done for the station in the digital space. We kind of refer to it as on-demand content now as opposed to podcasting. But our on-demand content is it's really blown up in the past couple of years for us.
You know, there was, right in the very beginning when podcasting kicked off, a number of radio stations were, you know, were trying to make the jump. Some did successfully, some did non-successfully. And part of it was the execution. And we consulted with a number of companies in the beginning. You know, we even talked with the folks at NPR when they were starting to get their stuff going. And it's some of the things that folks did just drove us absolutely crazy because they largely wouldn't listen to us. And, you know, those companies that really had their own way of doing things and decided their way was better than anyone else's, they don't have that, too much of a digital space these days. And so what was your guys' recipe there? How did you guys decide to go about, stacking it so that you would get this good on-demand utilization as well?
I don't have a great answer for that other than that I didn't come from the radio business.
Okay.
I'm a tech guy. So they brought me in about 6 years ago. And at the time I was very unfamiliar with radio. So to me, this was really the only thing we could do with it to get it on demand. So we ended up building a system in-house to facilitate the recording and distribution of all our audio, which ended up evolving into a pretty significant system for input of metadata, stripping of commercials, creating clips, highlights, etc. So I think the benefit we had is that not only did we have a company that was really focused on digital, but they brought in a guy that was pretty ignorant to the whole business, which kind of let me do what I thought we probably needed to do as opposed to what they thought they needed to do.
I'm looking at your guys' on-demand lineup and it's huge. Are these all internal shows over there?
No, about 75% of them are on-air shows. The others are things that we've recruited to become part of our network. Additionally, we do some weekly features that we treat as shows, even though if you were listening to the radio, you wouldn't think of it as a show. For right. example, there'll be maybe a daily segment on one of our on-air shows that's 5 minutes long. You're passing one right now, like Blue 42 for Brock and Salk. It's 5 minutes every day that's always about a specific topic. So in our world, we treat that as a show.
Got it. And I'm looking here at how people can click through very, very easy to get to nice graphics. I think that's a big part of it. And you got good navigation in here too.
Yeah, we also, this is one of our distribution channels. Of course, we use everything at our disposal. Right. And we've just launched a pretty robust app for iPhone and Android that is all based off of audio.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and one other really, really cool thing that they're doing as part of their station that's kind of unique is that they're doing live video streaming of their shows as well. So, and it's kind of like a multi-camera thing too. Yeah. James, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, we've put three cameras into each studio. We actually rebuilt our studios with the intent of delivering video, so it's more TV like now than it was radio. And it's good. You can watch live video. You can switch camera angles if you want to focus in on one host. The video for us really took off with the launch of our apps, because you can now listen to the live radio or click a button and simply watch it in studio.
And you'd be at the interaction of the co-host and stuff in there, and that can be a lot of fun too. So how do you handle then the switching? Does the guys right in the studio do the switching, or do you have a producer that's sitting back in the back that's actually switching the video views?
Actually, at this time, we leave it to the user.
Really?
So you default to a wide-angle view of the studio, and then you have the option of switching camera angles if you want. We're looking at ways that we can get in the business of actually creating something that's a little more TV-esque, where there would be a producer sitting there switching angles. We've also talked to some companies that will do camera switching based on the active microphone, but we haven't got to the point of being true TV quality where we depend on the user to pick the camera angle.
I think that's cool though, don't you think, Rob? That the basically the the listener picks what they, or the viewer picks what they want to watch.
I think that's what really, really stood out for me as I looked at what they were doing that was so different than I think what anybody else is doing in the space, is actually giving all the controls to its audience to zoom in on who they want to watch talk, and get a better angle on what's happening. It just adds a little bit more of a way for that viewer to connect with that show at a deeper level, is to be in control like that. I think a lot of people want that. I mean, I think as you think about, James, as you think about producing shows for television, maybe that capability is part of what you would use on like maybe a tablet or something like that, as part of this, you know, this kind of the tablet remote control scenario, where you could just do that with every show that you have. I mean, I think that this is the dream of, you know, having that connection with the audience. So yeah, I think it's really, really interesting, and it'd be great to see the data on that, to see, you know, whether the viewership on that went up because of that.
Right. Now, the other thing that we're doing is we record every camera angle. So we've got the capabilities of storing upwards of 3 years worth of this video. So the other thing that we can do in theory is start getting into the on-demand video business. So you want to listen to the podcast, great. You want to watch the show, great. And at that point, you would have the ability to have somebody in there that was actually creating this package, that was switching cameras, just creating a good visual package to go along with the show.
When you're recording all three channels, are you guys running a TriCaster or something from NewTek doing their ISO recording, or how are you guys actually doing the... How are you recording each of the cameras then?
No, I was afraid you were going to ask that. I'm kind of up at a little higher level looking down at it. And right. I'm not sure how it's actually set up.
That is real slick. It's curious to me, because here we are, we're live. There's, you know, people can come in and watch the stream, but they can't control the live video feeds. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got, you know, technically we can go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you guys are 5 and 6 on the video views. So, you know, how do I, if I was going to make 6 camera views available to the audience, how do you do that from a bandwidth? And that's really cool. I'd love to hear from your technical guy on how you do that, because, again, like Rob said, I'm sitting here scratching my head thinking, how are they doing that? I guess the beauty of living in where you live, you guys, it sounds like you guys have got a hell of a bandwidth pipe out of that building.
Todd, I can see the geek light bulb just went on right there.
Well, I'm trying to really figure out how, you know, how's that being done, because if it's 3 cameras per studio, it's 3 separate streams, you know, which is not difficult, I guess, if you have the bandwidth.
Well, it's also a player too. You have to have a certain kind of player that will allow you to click a button just in the lower part of the player that will allow you to switch streams. That's really, from a user perspective, that's the experience. I know the back end is probably a little more complicated than that, but
yeah. And to me, it's all magic. So I'm just happy that it works.
Yeah. That's cool. Looks like you guys have done a real nice job here. You know, one thing that we had a conference call yesterday. No, Friday. What day is today? Saturday. It was Friday. Company basically Friday morning called me. Basically, they're in a panic. They had hired a company to redesign their website, to build them a better back end. And they got to the point where they're getting close to launch, and the developer's completely overwhelmed. They don't have enough time, money. They can't get half of what they want. And they started on a platform that was not super conducive to, you know, to doing a network. And, you know, I felt bad, because we already had this built. You know, we've got the ability, kind of like you guys do. We build our own back end to do network sites and network, you know, production and all this great stuff that we built. And really, we could have gotten them up and running for probably one less zero on the end of a you know, the end of the checkbook that they're having to write. But, you know, now we're trying to help them, I guess, how should I say it? Not undo, but get them to the point where they can launch on this other platform. And we're really kind of, all we're doing is going to advise. And they're kind of stuck, having already spent the money. I think a lot of companies just don't do enough research when they're getting ready to do something like this. And you guys built the back end on this. How long did it take you guys to build the back end?
It was, it took us a little bit of time. It's the kind of thing that's evolved over the past several years.
Gotcha.
If we had started 5 or 6 years ago like we did, and there was something that did pretty close or nearly what we wanted to do, I probably would have gone off the shelf and tried to modify that.
Right.
But we were starting kind of from scratch and just decided to take it on.
Yeah, and I think it's a cool platform. You may actually have a product there that you could sell. you know, if you ever wanted to resell that to other stations, you'd have that as a division to make money. You might have something there that maybe is an additional business revenue model. But
it's, you know, something we've actually talked about before. We have other radio station clusters in our group that are using this as well. So it's paid off for us already.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah. So one part of this that we haven't really kind of totally opened the door on yet is the fact that James and what he's doing there is he actually is recruiting local podcasters to either produce their shows in his studios, and they have very elaborate radio production studio. You know, it's like what you would imagine at a major radio station, right, in a major market, right?
Right.
So it's a very, very professional studio, but he's recruiting local podcasters to join them as part of their kind of their network. So he has these tiers of shows, right? Ones that are on the air, ones that are on the air and podcasts, and ones that are just podcasts. James, could you kind of explain what you guys are trying to accomplish there in greater detail that I'm not really totally inside of?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we, just like you said, we've been recruiting local podcast talent. We happen to live in an area where there are a lot of people experimenting with technology, and there are a lot of podcasts. So just like you said, one of the things that we can offer is not only a hosting and delivery of these podcasts, but we can offer the studio, and we can offer the expertise for these podcasters to come in, work with a producer or a board operator in our building, use our studio, do the, you know, high quality recording that you would expect of a radio show. Now for us, it pays off in two ways. One, we get the more content, and as someone like me, I'm always hungry for more content. But secondly, this thing is becoming the bench for our radio station. So it used to be, you know, you'd throw people on nights and weekends overnight to kind of test them, see what their chops were like for the radio. Well, now we throw these guys in a studio, put them on a podcast, and the radio guys will listen to that and make show decisions based on what they're hearing. We've actually had 3 or 4 podcasts that have gone from digital podcasts that we recruited in to be part of our podcast network to actual shows on the radio.
Oh, that's cool. That's kind of a cool transition to be able to do it that way. So it's kind of reverse, Rob. It's like, okay, your audition is your podcast, and if you're cool enough, you can be on the air live.
Well, yeah, I think we have this kind of fascinating thing that's happening where there's radio talent that's kind of left the airwaves for whatever reason. There's a whole bunch of things. You know, if you look at Mr. Adam Carolla, he's a great example, right?
Yep.
You know, he left the airway for some contract reason or something like that, or, you know, a change in a station format or whatever. And then those guys go off and create their own podcast, right? And they create this big audience. And I know, James, you probably have an example of this. I can think of one. And then came back and started working for the station again, and was a successful podcaster, but took that audience back to the radio station. So, I mean, is there more you can add to that, James, on what your experience has been on that side of it?
Yeah, I mean, radio is one heck of a carrot that you can hang out there for people that are doing podcasting. There's something very sexy about getting behind a microphone in a studio and being delivered over radio. So you're right. I mean, we've had people that have had shows canceled, podcast blows up, and then all of a sudden the program director's back in my office saying, "We got to get this guy back on the radio." It does kind of change the dynamic. It's a different world where these guys can go out and create a following, create an audience, and then all of a sudden we're saying, well, wait a minute, let's expose you to this other audience.
You know, what's kind of interesting from this conversation is that, you know, living here in Hawaii, it's not the tech center of the universe. So, you know, I do a twice weekly tech show that is, you know, basically an hour 15, hour 20 of me jibber jabbering about personal stuff and tech. And, you know, my audience is global. But if I look at my stats and, you know, I have a very nice global audience. But if I look at my stats, the number of people that listen in Hawaii are just, you know, manimi, you know, very small. And, and you know, and it's funny because I was in San Francisco getting on an airplane yesterday and a guy come up to me, grabbed me, and he said, "Hey, I'm a fan of your show. How you doing?" And said, and I know this guy from Adam. And that's happened many times when I've been in the mainland, but here in Hawaii, people have no clue. So, you know, I'm just, you know, some just regular guy in the street. So it is kind of interesting that, you know, it is a cool, I would say it's kind of cool because then you not only have the global audience, but then you have all the benefits of everything that comes along with being connected locally. Because, you know, let's be honest, different types of doors get opened up in your local community after you be, you know, your known personality. It just, you know, if it's nothing more than access to VIPN clubs and, you know, you go into a restaurant and you're known, there are those perks. So I can see where this would be kind of savvy for podcasters to consider doing this. Now, we've got a couple of guys here in Hawaii that do they're on NPR. They do a segment every week, a tech segment. But the last time I listened to NPR was like, you know, I don't remember. I don't even think I've listened to NPR in 5 years. So, but I have listened to a talk radio station. I have listened to, you know, some regular kids in the car. They want to hear, you know, some pop music or whatever they want to listen to. So I guess that that's where the advantage is. You know, radio still has got a huge audience. That drive audience is huge.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we have a big audience. It's there's several questions as to how big that audience is, but it's pretty big. And your exposure is big in a city like Seattle, for example, where you could potentially reach 4 million radio listeners.
Right.
If we were getting 100 share,
so how do
which we'd like to do, but can't.
Yeah. So how do you guys work then the advertising in the actual podcast themselves? You strip it out completely and have no advertising, or you guys go and look for additional advertisers for the podcast portion?
Right now we strip out all the advertising and we sell the podcast independently of the radio show. So you could come in and sponsor a podcast, which would get you a pre-roll. You could put spots in the middle, but for the most part we just strip out all the ads. It ends up being about, for a typical hour of radio, you're going to get 33 minutes of content.
Right.
We strip traffic, weather, news, all of this stuff, so you get a nice chunk of content that somebody can end up owning. And it's a lot more affordable than trying to own the actual radio show. Somebody can come in and own the Dory Monson show or the Ron and Don show. These are shows on our station by owning the podcast where their message is delivered every time somebody listens to the show.
Right.
Now the one of the things that we're wrestling with right now is potentially including the stuff that is on air, because what we're finding is the majority of people are consuming the podcast within the first 24 hours of the actual airing of the show.
Yeah.
What's interesting is it's a very interesting business, and it's getting more interesting by the day, because we live in a world of ratings, and as we see our audience kind of shift to the digital platform, well, the ratings, you know, we get killed on, well, potentially killed on the ratings down the line, because people are using us away from the traditional delivery vehicle. So we get paid on ratings, and analog is dollars and digital is dimes. So we're still trying to make as much as we can on the analog front. How do we get credit for those people that are listening in the first 24 hours of that podcast on the radio side?
Well, I think this is a challenge that many folks are having. And, you know, this is, you know, we're working right now with a, without giving anything away, we just recently signed a contract with a very, very large podcast network that has a traditional broadcast arm, and then has the, what you want to call the, you know, the podcast portion too. So, you know, their challenge is a lot of the same. Now, they're not, they weren't so much worried about the market share. They were more worried about the, you know, the accurate measurement. So that's what we're kind of providing, is giving them, you know, the statistics that we provide for, you know, all our podcasters and in our, in a, basically our stat system. So the, you know, they basically came in and said, okay, now I know that, you know, exactly how this audience is breaking down. If they're coming there via the web, via the, you know, whatever 100 plus devices we're tracking and everything else. So they, you know, they weren't worried on the ratings, you know, the Nielsen type stuff, but I can see where a traditional radio station, that would be a main, a big, big, big concern.
Well, you know, it's something that we have to keep our eye on,
because
we still run a business that's based on a rating system,
right?
Where you get paid based on the rating, the number of people are listening to you. So if you're doing a spectacular job of creating this on-demand content, and you're potentially shifting your audience, you're still growing. There's a little bit of incremental growth, but you're also shifting a majority of these people over. You got to start questioning what you're doing. I mean, you don't want to get rid of it, so now you need to figure out, how do I make it all work together?
It's interesting.
Well, I think what you guys have tapped into is what the core reason why I think the broadcast radio side really hasn't jumped on board the internet distribution side quite as much is exactly that tension that's there. And I, you know, one thing we haven't really talked about is some of your shows, James, could probably benefit from having national ad buys.
Yeah.
Versus just local ad buys that you're doing mainly on your local broadcast side. So how are you guys, ramping that up, or what's the thought on that?
Well, you know, we have a national sales department, if you will, on the radio side. A lot of the local shows, when it comes to podcasts, they don't get quite the delivery out of our DMA that we'd like. But some of, as you know, some of our online only shows, TVTL is a prime example, has a national audience. So we will pitch that show. We're still pitching to local buyers, because we have a lot of direct sellers in the building. But it's with the idea that this is a national show. And if you're a local company that's looking to reach a national audience, this is a real good opportunity for you.
Yeah, I'm looking through your list and I see 10 that I could get offered an advertising deal tomorrow. You know, there's at least, you know, just a quick look down through here and get in on national advertising buys. And, you know, so it's kind of an interesting, and some of them I see are very local. So that, you know, that definitely is a challenge. But still, I think there's, you know, I'm looking at great comedy shows, you got great sports shows. Those, you know, those all are universal. You can universally sell those.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting model, and it's exciting to see what you guys are doing, being successful with it. I really like it. Now, as one thing I was noticing on the website, and if I look at, example, if I look at GeekWire, and I bring them up, well, there is a subscribe button. You pull that down, iTunes, RSS. Yeah, I was wondering how you were doing that. Are you guys going into set-top boxes like Roku, Boxy, or anything like that? Or are you guys just doing standard distribution on stuff?
We're investigating every possible distribution channel. In fact, I just had a phone call on Friday with some guys about developing a Roku application for us. We're at that point now where we're just, okay, let's push this content out as far as we can get and see what kind of audience we can generate. That may or may not be a good strategy, but at this time, that's our strategy. So we'll take anything and everything we can to deliver it.
One thing I would, what we see on the Roku is it's a video platform, you know, so if you're going to build a Roku app or a Boxy app or a Google TV app, definitely, try to front load it with as much video as you can. And then if you have audio, that's great. It's there. But, we see most of the views on the Roku is basically video. Very few people actually use it for audio because, they can go to the web. They can just load it in their browser and play it. They don't have to, there's other ways to get it, but the video seems to be the key with those set-top boxes.
James, I'm seeing a lot of kind of rumblings in the radio industry right now around them feeling like maybe they're under threat a little bit by digital distribution. What's your thought on that, and what the overall radio kind of business thinks of podcasting and thinks of the online threat from like a Pandora and those kind of things?
Oh wow! How much more time do we have?
Plenty.
We've got lots.
There's a couple of schools of thought in radio. Some people view digital as a real threat. You know, this is really going to disrupt our business. How do we fight back against it? And then there's those of us that are like, this is the rebirth of our business. This is a real opportunity for us to really expand this thing and make it much bigger than we ever had the potential to make it before, limited to just a tower and the general vicinity that you could spread your message. So there's no doubt that there's going to be a lot more competition in the space. But to me, there's still tremendous opportunity for someone that's producing professional, local, good content. I don't know if I'd want to be in the music radio business right now. That's a pretty tough spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But being in news and talk and sports, it's good content, and we're now getting opportunities to distribute it in ways that we never had an opportunity.
This is GeekWire's app of the week.
Sorry, I'm cruising your website and it autoplayed on me.
James is going, yeah.
Yeah, this is another download. I appreciate it. I pay attention to a lot of the radio trades. There's obvious concern over what's happening in the dashboard, which was typically the place that radio owned. To me, it's just about great content. If you can create great content, there's still a business for audio. People want audio. I mean, just look at any commuter or anybody with earbuds in. They're listening to some form of audio. It's a tremendous medium. We just need to make sure that we continue to understand that it's more than just distributing it via a tower. It's the content that matters. And if we get the content out there, we'll be successful.
So do you think that the movement towards getting 4G into the car, apps more and more in the car, is an opportunity or a threat for radio?
Oh, well, if you ask me, it's an absolute opportunity. I think that it's going to expand what we can do. We're just starting to investigate some of the opportunities that are available to us if we do have 4G in the car, and we can do some kind of custom programming to an individual. It really changes everything that we can do. Yes, there will be competition, but to me, that just has the potential to make us stronger.
So is that what you're counting on as far as with your strategy? Is it that's going to be the transition that we're going to see in the next 5 years is that more and more people start getting access to this stuff digitally through their car, through via their phones, through their direct connection with the vehicle?
I don't think there's any way to deny that that's what is going to happen. So I think if you were to say that, is that our strategy, would be giving us a little too much credit. We've been planning very well for the past 5 years, knowing that eventually we would reach a point sometime in the future where people are going to not have the tower to deliver the radio signal. So what can we do to continue to get our message out there? And I think that's where we are now.
You know, what's funny is when we first started podcasting back in 2004, we said, this is going to kill radio. And we were like, yes, we can compete on an equal playing field, because not everyone can qualify to be behind a broadcast mic, and maybe not all should. But with the interwebs, digital, and everything the way it is, it just, you know, it gives everyone a platform to be able to say what they want to say and how they want to say it, and and get it distributed. So, you know, we thought that was this would be the great equalizer. Has it had an impact on radio revenues? Probably not. But, you know, I think as we continue to move forward, and like Rob said, as you guys are indicating, as cars become more digitally connected, I'm going to tune in what I want to tune in, and I want to hear what I want to hear. You know, most people are still spending 30 to 40 minutes in their cars every day, twice a day, here in Hawaii, more than that. So, you know, do you want to listen to the drive? You know, maybe not. Maybe you want to fill your head with something else. So, I think radio's going to have a place for a long, long time. I don't think it's going anywhere, but you know, there's huge pressure on the FCC to get more spectrum. And I just wonder, at what point does the FCC start looking at radio spectrum as the way to get more digital? I don't know if it'll ever happen. There's, you know, radio has a huge lobby. It'll be a huge fight. But, you know, they're going to have to get spectrum somewhere. And where are they going to get it? Does that mean they're going to take AM and make everybody on AM move to FM? I don't know. You know, where does it go?
Well, there's certainly a movement towards trying to convert the HD radio band to deliver data. And I wonder if there's, you know, I know that some of the big radio networks are definitely playing with this right now. And James, feel free to jump on this too, but there's an opportunity there for maybe the radio networks to own the distribution of the car and not have to go through these wireless carriers, because they have that spectrum. James, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. We do have that capability. I don't know. I mean, that's a toughie. I think that as soon as you get 4G in the car, it's a level playing field.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can kind of do what they want. Then it becomes a matter of, it's really driven by the content.
Yeah,
and that person or that group that produces the best content and attracts the greatest audience will have a chance to succeed.
You know, Rob, I laugh when you said HD radio, because I bet you if you asked 100 people on the street if they've ever listened to an HD radio station, I bet you 99 out of 100 would say no.
That is extremely true, and that's why this topic is important, is because I believe that spectrum is going to be converted to digital delivery from the standpoint of data, not streaming radio.
Well, once you give somebody something, it's very hard to take it back, though, you know. So, you know, you go tell the radio stations, you can't have that HD spectrum no more. You have to return it. They're going to say no.
No, I think that the stations can deliver data services to the car is what I'm saying.
I see.
You know, it could be traffic. It could be other types of data to apps.
Right.
And then also be able to have a frequency channel that would deliver the potential of a radio stream as well, and the radio station could own that as well. So it's like this kind of way to go around the wireless operators is what I'm saying.
So how do the Clearwires and all those guys in the world, you know, you hear on these Clearwire stations, they're talking about this, they got some app that they, you know, every station is Clearwire is pushing this app that they have. What is it? I don't know. It's some that tells you how much I know what the app is, but So you guys have got an app now, and obviously you're pushing that in your guys' stations. Are you guys affiliated with a bigger network, or are you guys just a small family of shows there in the Northwest?
You mean on the radio side?
Yeah.
We're part of Bonneville International.
Okay.
Which is we have markets in Seattle, Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Salt Lake City.
Gotcha.
It's all radio plus one TV station in Salt Lake City. But it's a smaller radio organization, so it's not a Clear Channel or an Intercom, yeah. Which is an incredible advantage to us, because what Bonneville allows us to do is develop at the market level.
Right.
And when you get a success at the market level, then okay, now we'll look at taking that company wide.
You know, one thing that I will say is it's funny, because having traveled all over the U.S., depending on where I'm at, I'm mashing buttons on the radio to listen to something, and the programming's the same countrywide. They just distribute it. You know that's you know, there's nothing original except maybe a morning 7 a.m. to or maybe 6 a.m. to 8:30. Drive, and then after that it all goes to like this national music syndication stuff. It's just the same. It sucks. And I, you know, I think it's cool that it looks to me like you guys do, you know, have actual guys that are, you know, producing content all day. You're not relying on this big national feed. Now you may on some of your talk channels, but you know, that's to be expected on some of that syndicated stuff. But from the regular, you know, pop radio type stuff, it's not to me it's pretty boring what they're doing in the space.
James, yeah, are you doing any nationally syndicated shows, you know, feeds from satellite or anything like that? I don't think you are too much, are you?
Well, we do on our KTH station.
That's right.
That's all pretty much national, short of one local show. And then on the sports, we do a little bit. And then on Cairo, a little bit in the overnights. But we're producing, Cairo being our flagship station, it's producing 17 hours a day of local talk content.
Wow. That's
huge. That's such a rarity in today's radio business that as long as we can continue to fund that, I really believe that, you know, there's a lot of potential there.
Go ahead. And I think I don't know the exact number, but isn't it actual most stations are only doing maybe like 5 or 6 hours of original content?
I would guess. I mean, if you're lucky, most of these guys are just, you know, they're not
drive time stuff, right?
Yeah. It's not necessarily a business of the future. It's a business of the now. Right. And they're making their money now.
Very, very cool. Well, it sounds like you're doing some cool stuff over there at Cairo. I have to make sure I'm pronouncing that right. Cairo is in the city.
Right.
And want to make sure everyone gets over to Cairo Radio, KIRO radio.com. Check. I'm intrigued. I've been, you know, sitting here playing with your website. So, you know, that's one thing. It's any site that's got great graphics, and, you know, you guys have done a really good job on that. I think that's huge. And you can tell you've spent a lot of time on the branding and everything. It's you got a good graphics team there. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, one thing I saw in the news yesterday, I'm going to kind of switch topics a little bit here, guys, over at fastcodedesign.com, and this is the first time I think I've ever been at the site, but I think I found this on Reddit. They say that employers are now using sensors to track your productivity. So according to a Wall Street Journal article, employers are basically asking, quote unquote, asking their employees to volunteer to wear iPhone sized sensors, which record things like how often they stood up, conversation patterns, and where they took breaks. And it should be noted, they said they were allowed to opt out, though the true cost of doing so was not clear. In other words, are you going to get fired for opting out? But they used the data analysis provided by this company that was doing this, led to changes in both the design of the office and the structure of the workday. Kind of scary when an employer says, you need to wear this sensor. We want to see how many times you're getting up to get a cup of coffee or how often you're, you know. So that could be, you know, that could be used to track. Is that taking intrusion? Isn't that, even though you got an employer, is that a little bit deep on privacy intrusion, or does anything go when you're at the office of your employer? It's kind of weirded me out a little bit.
I don't know. I think at this point, there's probably not a lot of regulation on some of this stuff, so they're plowing uncharted territory here. But I think it's a sign of the trend, and we're going to see a lot more of this in the future. It's the you know, our world is getting surrounded by sensors, right? I mean, our phones have sensors in them. I think there's like 10 sensors in a phone. If you really think about it, there's a camera, the gyroscope, sound, you know, speakers, microphones. I mean, you just have these sensors that are coming more and more in our world. People are wearing Fitbits now that track their heartbeat and their heart rate and their temperature. I think that's just part of the contextualizing that's happening. And I think it's, you know, there's tracking of how you drive your car. Now you can get a discount on your insurance by putting a little tracker in your car that reports your GPS location, how fast you drive, where you drive, how many miles you drive. And I just think we're going to see a lot more of this kind of stuff. And I think Congress is going to be slow to come in and regulate this stuff to protect our privacy, because the technology is going to run it so far ahead. So I don't know. I don't want to monopolize.
You know what they said they did? It was that they discovered a correlation between higher productivity and face-to-face interactions. Duh. I think we all would know that. It found that social activity dropped off significantly during lunchtime, as many employees retreated to their desks to check emails rather than chatting with one another, which I think we all do. And that's maybe our lunchtime is, you know, are they expecting us to work during our lunch now too? In response, the company decided to make its once dingy cafeteria more inviting, improving lighting and offering better food. They also scaled back to a lone coffee station, a water cooler for the sales and marketing groups. In other words, they forced those two groups to get together and talk, which, you know, sales and marketing always has different objectives. So they use this for social inactivity. But the question is, when do you use that as a, you know, you're tracking someone to see if they're doing enough work, whether or not you're going to fire them or not? You know, that's kind of a weird. It just seems weird. What would you say if they asked you to wear a sensor there, James?
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I'm okay with it as long as you're going to record or reward me when I'm productive.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to wave that stick out there, you better come with a carrot too. And it sounds kind of crazy to me, but if I could have one, I would certainly take it, and I'd turn it on Tuesdays when I'm most productive, and I'd turn it off on Fridays, and I'd figure out some way to game the system for sure.
It's not going to be accurate anyway, so why do it, no, right?
No. Well, and that's with a lot of this stuff. You start to question. I mean, they record all this data, but who's actually looking at the data?
Right.
Yeah. You know, do they have experts that are making these decisions, or do they see, you know, people order macaroni and cheese? Let's load the lunchroom with macaroni and cheese, and then they get bored with that, and they got to start over. So
yeah, I don't think that that's the whole point. I think just putting the sensor on you is where the control comes, right? It's like it forces you to change your behavior. And I kind of wonder about this too, with all these sensors in our lives, and we're all getting freaked out about it. But if we all, right, the answer to this is we all just kind of mellow out and don't do anything bad, we're all perfect human beings now, because we're always being watched, right?
and you know, those days that you come into the office and you've, you know, maybe not get as much sleep, and, you know, they're, let's just to be honest, you know, we all human, we all have our good days and bad days. There's some days I get more work done in, you know, in 4 hours than I get done in 3 days, and it just all depends on, you know, mm-hmm. where your brain is, and we're all at different levels at different times.
If you're a manager of people and you can't determine the productivity of your employee without a computer device, you may not be a good manager.
Yeah, you should be the guy that's actually being managed versus managing. Right. But sadly, there's a lot of managers out there that don't know how to manage people. You know, they got that position through attrition or being in a company long enough and staying underneath the radar. I see that a lot in different places. It just drives me insane. You know what you do to a government worker, right? If you have a bad government worker, You just transfer them and you put them into a higher position. That's what you do with a government worker that's not productivity. That's a big joke. You know, that's what my buddies always say is if you got a government worker that's not productive, you don't fire them. You just get them out of your division, and usually that ends up being a promotion somewhere. So
yeah.
It's just, I'm sure we see that in every business and way of life.
Are you sure you're not in Seattle?
No. Let's see here. One other thing is going to, there was kind of slacking on news. Oh, let's talk about a Seattle dive bar. No Google glasses allowed, declare Seattle dive bar. Google's high tech augmented reality project glass spectacles are still in development, but this, the folks over at the Five Point, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the Five Point or not.
Doesn't sound like the kind of bar I would hang out in.
It's posted on their Facebook page. For the record, the Five Point is the first Seattle plan to ban advanced Google glasses. Well, you know, all right, so this could be one of two things. Number one, and again, I have no idea. This is my opinion. I have no idea what the Five Point kind of a place is. So does the Five Point not want Google glasses because maybe something's going on at that business they don't want anyone to see?
That's exactly what it is.
You know, okay, so... And again, this is my speculation, and I'm not saying that's the case, but
well, the title of the article said, you know, Google glasses banned at dive bar. That's pretty much that tells you what it is.
This is a very interesting article because it comes back to what we were just talking about. Because if you dig deep into that article, what you're going to find is our radio station broke that story. And the audio, what we ended up doing with that story, it was the Luke Burbank show on Cairo Radio.
Yeah.
And what we ended up doing with that show is we've got digital people that listen to the radio. They write stories based upon what they're hearing, and then they attach the audio clip of that story. So we can get that out there real quickly, and then all of a sudden other news operations are picking this up. And our audio is getting linked up across the web now because of that.
And this is right off your guys's one of your guys's podcasters, offgeekwire.com. So that's where I found the article. So it kind of comes full circle. Very, very cool.
And Luke is a big podcaster too.
Yeah,
he's got a big podcast show.
He does. Yeah. And that's the one of the guys that if he needs advertising, no problem. We can get him advertising. As a matter of fact, I gotta go look in our database. We may actually have done deals for him in the past. I can't remember if we have or haven't, but for some reason this show is familiar. Yeah.
We should talk off air for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I might be wrong. There's a lot of geek shows. Hey, here's one right here. So, also, it's been reported Apple finally fixed their login bug on the App Store. Fixing a lot of vulnerabilities. And of course, this goes back to like almost like July of 2012 when people's accounts were getting compromised. And they finally did a fix and put some stuff in place. Took them long enough to, they're trying to shut down this password stealing that was going on. And so they've laid in HTTPS and a few other things. It seems like because they were really slow to roll this, weren't they, Rob?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't really follow the story too much. I don't know a lot of depth on it, but yeah, it does seem like if that was a vulnerability that probably needed to be taken care of sooner.
Do either of you guys game at all?
A little Used bit, to. not much.
So, what's your take on the whole SimCity thing that happened this past week with their DRM failure? And I don't know if you guys would follow that or not, but there was. Basically, they rolled out SimCity, and then people couldn't get to the server to get their DRM validation, and basically it was just this big chaos of people were pissed. Amazon pulled the digital download because they had like huge number of one star recommendations, but the folks over there have really screwed the pooch on this one, and just shows you again DRM once again to the rescue, right?
Yeah, it either works or it doesn't. It's like an on-off switch, right? If you've got a problem with it, it's going to take the whole thing down for a lot of users and make a lot of people upset.
Yeah, they were trying to prevent people from running the application on more than one computer at a time. And
I see.
Yeah, so EA didn't put enough server infrastructure in to handle the, you know, the demand for an app that, you know, I think it was, what was it, 6 or 7 years between release of SimCity versions or something like that. So they were, it was huge, huge number of disappointed people.
Yeah.
But, oh, hey, one thing that I did see that was kind of good news on a privacy standpoint, the appeals court has curbed border agents' carte blanche power to search your gadgets. You know, up to just this past week, if you went overseas or even just into Mexico and came back with your digital device, a border agent had the ability to take your phone and basically look at anything on it, copy it. Same thing with your hard drives on your computers and so forth. But a court has basically, it's a divided ruling, an 11-judge panel at the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals calls this the most significant privacy decision in the digital age following Supreme Court ruling last year requiring authorities to get warrants on GPS tracking. So basically, their ruling says a person's digital life ought not to be hijacked simply by crossing the border. When packing traditional luggage, one is accustomed to deciding what papers to take and what to leave. In the 8-3 ruling, they say when carrying a laptop, tablet, or other device, however, removing files unnecessary to an impeding trip is an impractical solution, given the volume and often intermingled natures of the files, also a time-consuming task. They may not even effectively erase the files. So I think this is a huge win on the privacy standpoint.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm amazed that they were actually doing this. I mean, I'm sure they had to have significant probable cause before they would do that. None.
On demand and no need for a warrant or anything. Now, they can still detain you and they can still go get the proper, you know, search warrant or whatever they need. They can still do that as you would want them to be able to, but they just can't willy-nilly grab your stuff and take your, you know, your hard drive back in the back and open it up and view it. Mm. I know in Japan, we always, when I was active duty military, and of course I've been retired now for 5 years, but we used to tell guys when you're going to Japan, make sure you take the porn off your computer. Because if you go into Japan and they inspect your computer and find the porn, you're going to jail. There, you know, and that had happened a few times. Or even CDs are carrying discs with porn on it because the, you know, basically the pornography laws in Japan are much stricter, even though they create most of the weirdest porn out there. So, yeah, kind of an interesting move here by the court, and we'll see if this gets, this goes any further. What was that? The thing that's good. Oh, hey, if you want to South by, there's a 7.39 gig of free music. So that every year I download that. So I don't know if you guys have done that in the past, but with the music festival being getting ready to kick off here for the 9th year in a row, South by shared DRM free RIAA safe songs of all the performing artists to 7.39 gigs. So, all tracks can be downloaded. I grab it every year, and there is just a huge mix of every possible genre you could even think of from this. But to 1,212 total tracks to grab.
It's quite a music collection right there.
Yeah. So do you guys do any indie stuff over there at Cairo, or are you guys mostly playing traditional type of top 40 type stuff?
No, we don't play any music.
Oh, no music at all, huh?
Yeah, no music at all.
Wow.
Which has us in a pretty good position.
Talk, and more talk.
I love it.
Yeah, talk, sports, news. No music.
You know, I'm probably one of the few guys in America that doesn't listen to sports coverage. I just don't have time. I don't dislike sports, but there's just not enough hours in the day, and
I'm not unlike you, but it is crazy how voracious some of these sports fans are.
Man.
I mean, they will just eat everything that you put in front of them.
You know, as hanging out with some guys this past week, and they were talking about, and they're like, so and so got a new contract, and they're and I'm like, you know, I'm given kind of like who, what team, you know, I mean,
never heard of them.
And you know, these guys are just like looking at me like, you know, I'm like, sorry, I just don't do sports. So, How much have you guys been following? This is a case that's got me completely fascinated, and this is probably the last thing I've got for today. But have you been following this Prenda Law? Have you been watch this at all, Rob?
Prenda Law? No, I haven't.
This Prenda Law and their lawsuits.
Uh-uh.
If you want some to do have a fun hour of comedy, you'll want to read up on Prenda Law, and you can find a lot about them over at torrentfreak.com. But basically, these they're copyright trolls, and they've got a judge that they're going to have a hearing on Monday that I just can't wait to read the transcript, because it's happening down in L.A., but these folks have been hiding behind shell companies and using lawyers kind of in a weird way, and there's basically the crux of it. They don't want to tell this judge who the owners are, who the principals, who writes the checks, all this stuff. And this judge has basically said, bring your butts to court. We're going to have a discussion, and we're going to know by the end of the day who owns, who is in control, who writes the checks, who the subsidiaries are, all this stuff. But they filed a last-minute appeal basically saying, hey, you don't have jurisdiction over us. We don't have to come to court. So they're doing everything in their power to basically stop from being inquisited, you know, basically run probably – these guys are probably going to end up in jail before this is all over. But long story short, this judge is out for blood, and you can just smell the shark swimming. And this company just recently – also went after a number of sites that, quote unquote, were talking about them negatively, and they wanted IP logs and went back 2 years, all kinds of crazy stuff. But if you want some entertaining reading, I've been covering it on my regular show nearly weekly, talking about them. But I wish it would be on live TV, because if it was, I would watch. It's gonna be a laugh a minute. But you know, these trolls that are out there. They have worked with without hardly any restrictions. They've been able to file all these different lawsuits and threaten people and use almost gangster style type of shakedowns to get money out of people. And it's finally, you got a group that is being abusive, in my opinion, that are going to pay the piper here soon. So I think it's just a big wake up call for these companies that are just arbitrarily going after folks, that maybe their time in doing this is over.
Well, that's going on in that kind of the podcast area with, that whole name troll, applies to patents and copyright and a lot of things these days. There's companies out there that build their entire business around just doing that.
Yep, they do. And that's one thing, you don't see too much litigation in the actual radio space. I think those boundaries are all pretty much set. You know, you see every once in a while, maybe over a talent issue, but generally that stuff is not, hear about that in a regular traditional media, at least in the radio portion. Maybe you do, but maybe we don't hear about it too often.
No, we don't. We don't typically encounter issues like that.
Yeah.
It's, the tech world is, I hate the trolls, but then I don't necessarily blame them, because they're entrepreneurs in a system that has allowed them to do this. You got to fix the system, do away with these idiots.
Yeah, and it's just like I heard that Apple is having a hard time bringing their streaming radio stuff to market because of overpricing issues and stuff like that. But anyway, it's... it's a model that's being shook up. There's a lot of business models that are being shook up by the internet. So I think it's good. I think it's, we're just going to continue to evolve. We'll see what happens. The fit will survive, and those that can't move fast enough will be on the unemployment line. So Rob, did you see anything this week that intrigued you that was tech worthy?
I thought that story about, the Google Glass ban at the, was the highlight of the week.
Do you think that was more of a publicity stunt by those guys?
Yeah. Because there aren't any Google Glasses yet. So it's just, it's a preemptive strike, right?
Yeah. So,
They got some good play out of that for sure.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Just thank goodness it happened in Seattle is all I can say.
can't happen on your radio station.
Yeah. All right.
So, James, what do you think then on the new digital space? Are you excited to see where things are going to go for the future?
Oh, I love the digital space. I think that the business we're in right now, radio's got a lot of potential. I mentioned earlier, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and their adoption rate to the iPad, the iPhone, tablet computing, it's just the world's about to change dramatically. And I can't think of a better place to be, quite honestly.
You know, and I've got a full bevy here. I've got a 16, 15, and a 9-year-old that are as digitally connected as, you know, any other kid in the country probably. And it's, you know, they, you know, I have to force, you know, digital off times. I have to basically take cell phones away at a certain time in the early evening. And if they're not doing homework related stuff, you know, we shut the computers off. Just to, you know, because if not, we would all be, you know, head down in our tablets and in our devices. And it's pretty crazy. And it's, you know, I guess I, you know, I think it's good and bad. And I, you know, I had to laugh because my son, I tell this story a couple of times, but we're this fall, we are at a football game. It was the homecoming game for the team that, where they go to school. And so, you know, he, for whatever reason, he sat close to me. I don't know why. He, you know, him and his buddies were like one seat down and a couple over. And, you know, and they're all, you know, they're not watching a football game. They're all texting. And I'm like, I said to Ray, I said, are you going to watch a football game? Or are you going to, who are you texting anyway? So I'm texting that girl over there, right over there. And I'm like, and I said to him, and literally I'm like, get your ass up and go over there and sit down beside her. I don't text her, you know, and he kind of looks at me kind of like, you're from Mars, Dad. You don't do that. You don't go sit down. But it's just.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah. So you're texting someone that's, you know, 10 feet away. So I guess that's the new way to hook up, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah. Todd, I did think of one thing that I've been thinking about here a little bit this week in regards to kind of gadgets and tech. Is that, do you guys feel the kind of the buzz and the momentum of Apple kind of fading a little bit? And it seems like that the attention and the cool factor is definitely shifting over more towards Google and Samsung now. I don't know. Is that a feeling that you're feeling as well? Does Apple feel a little bit kind of behind now, behind the times?
I think Apple had a great run, but you know, they haven't done a lot. They've done nothing to spice the interface up. And you know, I've got a Android phone that I'm largely using to play Ingress with. Mm-hmm. And if you guys get a chance to play Ingress, the Google game that is the global game, it's pretty addicting. You know,
more addicting than Angry Birds? Is that possible?
Well, in order to play, you have to get out and about. It's not one of those things that you sit and play.
Okay.
You have to actually move around, and it's basically a global war game is basically what it is. I guess that's the best description of it. Probably that's not exactly proper, but long story short, it's, you know, for me, using a variety of devices, and I haven't had a Windows phone, but the Android to me is pretty compelling. They've got lots. It's, you know, it gives me a lot more ability to personalize, you know. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But from a simplicity standpoint, I don't think you still can beat the iPhone. I think they've made it so easy that anyone can use it. An Android device is still a little bit more on the geek side, but mm-hmm. I don't know, that Samsung Galaxy S4 is looking pretty sexy.
Yeah. I love the Apple ecosystem. I'm kind of an Apple nut, but you can see how there is the potential that that they could go down the path of being seen as uncool. I know that most of the kids that have iPhones now have got them because their parents upgraded and gave them the older iPhone, which I don't know if that's as cool as getting that new Galaxy.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, this has to be shipped back tomorrow. This is a LG Optimus G phone, 4 cores in it. It just absolutely, from a graphics and performance standpoint, smokes the iPhone as far as processor speed and all that goes. But this was, this phone was fantastic to use, and it was, you know, it's pretty big footprint, and you know, that was really my first using, and I think I've used it for about 3 months, and but it's I have to say I was pretty impressed with Android. But again, having been an iPhone for 5 years or however long they've been, you know, I've had an iPhone since the beginning. I just wish they would, you know, let's freshen the design up a little bit. Let's make it a little bigger, and let's, you know, work on the, you know, it's time for a refresh on the and the GUI too. So we'll see. But I guess we're gonna all have the iWatch soon.
That's right. Yeah, I don't.
Sorry.
So what do you guys think about that? And do you think that's gonna make a dent in Apple's, you know?
Why do I wear a watch? I have a phone in my pocket. Why do I want to wear a watch?
Well, I will definitely buy one. But if Cook comes out and shows the iWatch as the big thing, I think it'll land with a thud.
Yeah.
I want the Google Glasses. That's what I want. I can't wait. I cannot wait. I'm like,
well, you guys know that there's other companies working on the same product. That I think Google has kind of gotten ahead of the hype around this stuff. But I know that all the big companies are working on similar products now. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a handful of these come out about the same time Google Glass comes out.
It's I think more the better, you know. And I just picked up some GoPros, and I'm going to try to do. We're going to get them hooked up and have them wired in the car. So we're going to. I've got a little experiment I want to try to see how good the audio is going to be, and we're going to do some tests. But we may be doing some drive type shows here with some GoPros. We're going to see how it works out. But you know, it's amazing what you can do with you know, if I was wearing Google Glasses. You know, or if I had two people in the vehicle wearing Google Glasses that could record the video at the same time, there's going to be some interesting content development opportunities with these things.
What might that be, Todd?
Well, there's obvious, there's some very obvious stuff that's going to be used for. You know, the porn industry is just going to buy these things up like crazy. But you think about, you know, there's just... You two or three people wearing glasses that are doing a show together. Yeah, it'd be really cool. Now that the problem is people, you know, their heads are all over the place. So it's how are you going to edit all that? But that's yet to be seen. So that's why I'm going to experiment with the GoPros, and they'll be fixed mounts.
Well, Todd, I can see a connection here between what we were talking about earlier with James with his switching player technology, how that could come to, you know, that type of situation with Google Glass, right?
That's
if you're going to watch people in that way, you're going to need to have some way to switch, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting.
If you want to see how that technology is going to be used, go to a certain show in Vegas held in January, and you're going to find out real quick how they're going to use this technology. They're the ones that are going to lead the pack.
Couldn't be AVS, could it? Or AVN?
Yeah,
sorry.
AVN. Yeah, they're going to lead the pack. If you want to see what's going to happen in digital in the next 5 years, they're the ones to watch.
It's crazy how much tech that industry actually influences.
Oh, it's incredible. Because, you know, they're always looking at ways to, I guess for a better word, get new angles.
Boy, have we digressed.
Yes,
now.
Yes, we have. Are you going to go to NAB, Rob? Are you going to come out to NAB at all?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I would love to, actually. I think that the whole connection between podcasting and radio, I think, is very important now. So, but I don't presently have plans. I would love to, though.
Yeah, I'm very close to pulling the trigger. I actually have a sponsor to go down, so I'm very, very close. I may actually be doing some content at the show. Time will tell, but... I know of some very cool announcements that are coming that I can't say anything about, but are going to shake up the industry. There's going to be some very big, in our space, streaming announcements. Some very
Todd,
big
have
ones.
You been following the new podcast network / kind of ad sales network that's kind of foundational around Launchpad Media and PodcastOne.com?
Podcast One, I haven't even heard of them.
It's a new, James, have you heard of them?
I haven't, no.
PodcastOne.com?
Yeah, it's a company that was founded by a longtime founder and radio exec of Westwood One, who's actually created a new company to do ad sales into podcasts.
This must be Podcast O-N-E, not Podcast One. I end up on a Chinese...
It's O-N-E. And they're starting to pull together an aggregation of podcasts from big name radio broadcasters and celebrities.
Is he out of L.A.?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I know. Yep. Yeah, I've heard something about this. But yep. I didn't know what company it was.
So they're building a network that has their own shows, as well as working with other providers, you know, like Adam Carolla and Chris Hardwick and all those guys to sell advertising against their networks.
Right.
Right. And then they're going to build their own app ecosystem as an aggregator.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So who is this guy that's building this? Do you know who it is? He says he's
I'd have to go look it up. If you go to Launchpad, I think it's launchpaddm.com.
Launchpaddm.com. So this is where they're doing their ad sales?
Yeah, that's their kind of, that's the company behind all this.
Got it. So he's working with Adam Carolla. I had heard that.
And I think Kevin Smith and I think a lot of Joe Rogan and all those guys.
Huh.
So there seems to be kind of some movement towards trying to pull together kind of a consortium of, you know, more collaboration, more connection between kind of podcasters, not unlike what you've been doing, Todd, for many years, of trying to pull together a large network and be able to communicate and sell ad deals. Because as you know, the advertisers are looking to buy, you know, eyeballs and ears, and they want to do it in as simple way as they can, and trying to buy into a large number of big shows is not a bad way to do it.
Right. Well, I'll be curious to see if they get the same exact advertisers that we have.
They probably will. And hopefully it'll bring in some new advertisers into the space too.
Yeah. Well, interesting. So I've definitely got a little homework to do on these guys. See who the latest competition on the street is. Well, that's good. That's very, very good. Well, we'll have to definitely check them out. All right, guys, let's spend an hour and a half here, so let's pull the plug. Everyone, thanks for being here. And James, again, everyone, check out KIRO Radio.com, KIRO Radio.com. And Rob, where are they finding you these days? RobGreenlee.com?
That's a good place, as well as on my Twitter account at RobGreenlee.com, or at RobGreenlee. What am I saying?
Yeah, very, very cool. And, of course, if you have comments on
today. .coms and ats and... Yeah.
If you've got comments on today's show, you can email them here, geeknews@gmail.com, and we'll cover the email on the next show. But thanks for being here. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule, James. And Rob, thanks for doing this. Both of you, thanks for doing this on Sunday.
Good. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. And the rest of the audience, the stream will stay up, but the recordings are coming down. Everyone take care. Aloha.
Bye.